and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 13, Men of Honor from 2000. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
The first time in a while we have no guest. Well, I guess the Cider House Rules episode had no guest either.
Well, that was a makeup episode, but this is a true solo bolo.
A true solo bolo. We have Men of Honor, Charlize's, I think, third movie in 2000. There's another one to come. The next episode's also 2000. Thought to myself, how is she doing all these movies in 2000? Turns out, because she's not in them very much.
Yes. This is where in the movie is Charlize Theron? I was like, where is she? She's not here. No wonder she gets around to all these different sets, because she's there for like a week.
When I was watching the opening credits, I saw De Niro, I saw Cuba, and I was like, all right. And then,
yes,
you know,
De Niro.
I see a bunch of names. I'm like, did I miss her? And then, at the end, and Charlize Theron, which I think, if I remember right, the only time I remember this for Cage, the first time I remember this for Cage, was Kiss of Death, 1995, and Nicolas Cage, maybe as Little Junior, whatever.
And, or was that With?
With.
I can't remember them.
One or the other, but it was the first time in his career, took him 14 years to be like, I'm someone who doesn't have a huge part, but I'm a big enough star.
Yes.
That I deserve special recognition.
Right.
Here, special Charlize, 5 years into her career.
Crazy.
Here she is, like, and Charlize Theron. Charlize Theron.
Yeah, and that's awesome, because it's like, she's going to be here, just hold on, like, stick with the movie, because you'll get there eventually. But no, that is really cool, like, her being a woman and getting it sooner than Cage and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's wild, like, her rocket to stardom is going super fast.
If this was a podcast about Cuba Gooding Jr., this would be an amazing movie to talk about.
Or De Niro, even.
Or De Niro, who is... He sort of teeters for a while, I think, between, like, is he trying and is this parody? And then, like, I think by the end you're like, oh, no, he's actually pretty good in this movie.
Yeah, I think he is on the edge of Popeye. Like, that's the problem. You know what I'm saying? He's in the Navy. He's got a squinty eye. He's smoking a corncob pipe.
He's got the big tattoos on
his arms. He's got the same sailor anchor tattoos, except they're on his hand, I think, instead of his arms. And I'm just like, you know, you're so close to being the real Popeye here. If you just take that extra step over the edge, and this would have been brilliant performance.
Who was Popeye in the Popeye movie? Is that
Robin Williams? Yeah. And I still, if you watch The Master, if I ever get to meet Joaquin Phoenix, I'm going to ask if he is doing a little Popeye in that movie too, because he's a sailor with a squinty eye and a hunchback, and he likes to fight a lot.
Shout out to P.S. I Love Hoffman, coming soon, probably,
yes.
Right? We're in, like, as we're recording this, probably around 2009, 2010, that's 2012, I think, so, like, probably not. I mean, you know, when this episode comes out, probably shortly after now.
Yeah, a couple of
The Master bit. Available on P.S. I Love Hoffman. But instead, we are here to talk about Charlize Theron, who is in, I think, four scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
She kind of drunkenly stumbles her way through both the movie and the decades that the movie encapsulates. The first scene she's in is legitimately incredible, where she shows up drunk, pissed that De Niro... We don't know at the time. I was like, who is she in this movie? Because the whole thing, again, just like Cider House, which, spoiler alert, we just recorded the revisited the In Memoriam episode, so I think we're going to be referencing Cider House more than we would otherwise. Like Cider House, this takes place in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, right? Like, it takes place a while ago.
Yeah.
The film is about Cuba playing this guy Carl Brashear, based on a true story about the first black search and rescue diver in the Navy in history. It talks, there's a lot about racism in here, there's a lot about, you know, segregation, but I was like, she's not gonna be the one to, because I feel like this movie isn't the movie, like, she's not dating a black man. So I was like, she's gotta be affiliated, it's like, it's not gonna be, she's not gonna be Cuba's girlfriend. But I was like, how is she gonna be here? I'm like, is she gonna be De Niro's daughter? No.
Close.
De Niro's wife.
Yeah.
They make a joke later, like, oh, you have such a beautiful daughter. And he's like, come on, honey, or whatever.
And he's got that Travis Bickle face on when the guy looks like a complete maniac in that scene, but yeah.
But I was like, how is she gonna be here? And so she first appears when Cuba goes to this bar where literally everyone else in his Navy class in Bayonne, New Jersey, shout out New Jersey, is drinking, right? And they're all there, and he's not allowed to go in there because I guess it's a whites-only bar or whatever. She shows up, pissed that De Niro, pissed that her husband missed their anniversary.
Yes.
And then she introduces herself with her last name, Sunday, which is De Niro's last name. We're like,
yes.
Oh, no.
Yep.
And so she, already drunk, already pissy, brings Cuba into this bar, and everyone is pissed at both of them, and then De Niro comes over, and De Niro acts in a way like he doesn't know her, which is, I was like, oh, I think to get, like, I don't know what is happening.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in this scene, especially considering the scene that came right before it, you know? Like, here's what's weird. They're celebrating because Cuba Gooding Jr. rescued a diver from this wreckage.
Yes.
And the white dude who ran away for being a pussy gets the Medal of Honor. And then they're all in the bar that night, like, celebrating about it, and Cuba's excluded. And then I'm not sure if De Niro owns the bar. I feel like a lot is cut out of this movie. I feel like De Niro owns that
bar. It's also a long movie. It's 2 hours and 8 minutes. Like, it's solidly already probably too long.
And I still feel like a lot's been cut.
I agree.
But like, yeah, Charlize is, like, drunk driving, crashes, like, almost crashes into Cuba Gooding Jr.
She will shortly actually crash her car in short order.
And I was like, oh, no, don't tell me she dies.
Also, red sports car.
That's right, yeah, of the time. Yeah, a red sports car of the time.
Shout out Cage Club.
She is, like, all glamored up. Like, she looks gorgeous in this. And then I find out she's the trophy wife. She's, like, De Niro's trophy wife. And De Niro, apparently, it's funny, like, he's... Not that he starts, because the movie starts sort of in the middle, but when the movie starts, like, proper, when you're introduced to De Niro, like, he's a badass. Like, he has all these ranks and medals and shit. And then by the end of the movie, he's, like, demoted all the way back down to, like, nothing.
Yep.
So, like,
He's a master chief, is the highest rank.
Yeah, master chief.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense that he would be that type of jerk off to have, like, a trophy wife, like, you know, and, like, keep her under his thumb and not let her have any fun. And, like, you know, on their anniversary, he's out drinking with the boys instead of, like, taking her to dinner and stuff like that. So it's a very strained relationship.
I did not add this movie to the list of movies that Charlize Theron plays an unattainable dream girl where she has to date far below her class, because she's also a mess in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, she is drunk most of the movie. She kind of sobers up as he sobers up, because they're both messes.
I feel like she gets him sober.
Yes. Well, and she also gives him the ultimatum, like, hey, I'm still here for you, but if you have another drink again, if you do, like, basically, if you act in any of the crazy nonsense ways that you've been acting for most of the relationship, you know, most of before the movie,
keep walking.
I'm gone. Like, just keep walk on by me or whatever. And he, I think, really sort of listens to that.
Yeah. I really like De Niro in this movie. Like, I like this movie more than I think you like this movie, just in general.
I just feel like it's a movie that I've seen. Like, it doesn't...
Oh, no. It's super predictable, right? And this has, like, a bit of that Cider House sort of feel to it, where it's, like, it's way too sweet for some of the issues at hand, but then...
But I like this more than Cider House.
Oh, yeah. I do, too. But what's weird, it's, like, it would be, like, a G-rated movie if it weren't for the language, and they really push the language.
They push the language, and also, like, Cuba gets his leg sliced off in this movie.
Yeah, maybe PG. That one shot of gore is pretty heavy. I don't know, like, I really like Cuba in this too. I think he's awesome in this. The
really
movie has a lot of issues, though. Like, I'm not gonna say, like, it's a perfect movie, it's a great movie, it's, you know, it should be a masterpiece. I'm not gonna say any of that. I'm just gonna say, for, like, a predictable slice of this guy's life, it's like a biopic, I guess. I liked what it was involved with, like, the Navy diving stuff. Like, I really found that interesting. I really think that's, like, you know, incredible feats of strength and bravery and, like, all that kind of stuff. So, like, I think for me, once he gets to the Navy, becomes, like, trying out to become the diver, like, I'm with the rest of this movie.
I think the best way to sum it up, just to sort of really echo what you just said, is that the most popular review on Letterboxd says, this is the most underrated feel-good movie I've ever seen.
Mm.
Seriously, all general audiences will be pleased with this one. Nothing groundbreaking, but it just puts a smile on your face. It's better than most people realize it is, and I really want more people to watch it. And this guy gave it 4 out of 5 stars. You know, I talked about, on a couple different podcasts, how I don't really like biopics, biopics, whatever, because it just feels like it's too sprawling. It doesn't capture enough. But, like, this works well. Like, he starts out, like, you know, his dad is this backbreaking worker. His dad, of course, dies in the movie, you know.
Off screen.
And he's like, whatever you do, don't grow up to be like me. I want you to be more. And he goes off to, you know, he joins the Navy and he's a cook. And then you know that this is the story about him becoming this diver or whatever, right? And so, of course, he's going to face all these challenges and then overcome all these obstacles and everything like that.
Yeah.
I think the performances are all good. It's just nothing about this is, like, I'm not going to remember anything about this movie in 2 weeks.
I'm going to remember Give Me My 12 Steps. Like, that's what I'm going to remember from the end of this movie, when they're in the courtroom and Cuba's trying on the new suit and he has to walk 12 12 steps in it.
He basically looks like a Big Daddy from Bioshock. In the like, yeah. That's what the vibe is.
That's what Big Daddy was, though.
Yes, like, a diver.
Taken from these things and stuff. But, you know, you're right. Like, the movie, that's what's weird. Like, the movie doubles down on everything, you know? Like, I feel like it tells you everything twice. Like, you know, his trouble with his bunkmates. Like, there's the scene where they walk out. But then there's, like, another scene where they all brawl and stuff. So it's like, okay, we get it. Like, and then I feel like resolutions happen way too quickly. De Niro comes around from being a drunk racist to accepting Cuba way too quickly.
Although, like, we do see that's coming because we were talking about before we started recording that this does what a lot of movies, a couple movies, like, you know, Reindeer Games most recently on this podcast. And, you know, we're talking about how I hate it in, like, Don't Breathe. But this movie starts sort of, I think you put it well, like, at the end of the second act that we see. It's like 1966, and De Niro is bashing skulls.
Popeye.
He's bashing skulls because people are being racist around him.
Well, yeah, he went AWOL and he's been recaptured. And those are the commanding officers. He's beating the hell out of them.
And Cuba's on TV, I think, right?
Yeah,
and, like, he's doing something great. And, like, these guys are talking about, like, you know, all this racist stuff. And, like, he headbutts one and, like, sort of headlocks the other. And you're like, oh, but then we flash back 20 years.
Yeah.
And he is, I mean, like everybody else, except for Michael Rapaport, who is really good in this movie. Everybody else is just super racist and, like, you know, they don't like that Cuba jumps in when it's just whites only swim time.
Right.
And even when people are like, oh, you're the fastest swimmer we have, like, we need you on this team, they're not happy that this is happening.
That one other guy from, I always forget his name, but there was one Navy guy who sees him and gives him a leg up. And the guy from Deadwood, he's on that guy right there.
Oh, Powers Booth.
Powers Booth. Yeah, so, like, Powers Booth.
Cy Tolliver.
Yeah, so he's the only other one, too. Like, he isn't, you know, he sees the potential of Cuba and gives him a shot and everything and takes him out of the kitchen. And
he's like this grounded realist, though. He's like, I can endorse you, but it's not going to mean anything. He's like, and Cuba's like, you know, I just want a shot. He's like, all right, I'll endorse you. But he sort of goes, like, he's not in it a lot. Like,
No.
He just gets in there. Yeah. He basically brings him to the area and is like, hey, you're on your own now.
Yeah, you know, that's what's another thing is, like, the movie feels like it should be PG, and, like, I feel like if it was PG-13 even, that maybe it would feel, like, more appropriate to the tone that we're getting here, because, again, like, with Cider House, I feel like some of the issues here are sort of softened. I mean, many of them are not, but I feel like some of them are, and I feel like maybe we didn't get enough time with Cuba and his girl, and then, you know, because that also feels like
his girl, who I didn't capture her name, like, I didn't realize her name, like, I had to look it up.
And that's one scene to another where, like, they meet in the library and then he wants to marry her in the very next scene and stuff. And if we had just gotten more of them in society being, you know, this black couple in a predominantly white area and everything, and having to see them struggle together, bringing them together, maybe would have help their relationship work. I mean, I just feel like those things are rushed. The movie focuses on the diving, and the peripheral stuff is just going to sort of happen because it needs to at the way and when it needs to.
Which I think makes it work pretty well. I mean, I agree that I wish that we had more about certain things or cut those things out. I mean, I guess you need to have him falling in love and, you know, meeting his wife and whatever and whatever. But I think what they focus on keeps the story moving. It's just, I agree, like, but I also don't know how you add that kind of stuff in and not make it a 3-hour movie.
No, well, that's the other thing. It probably, I could imagine this was like a 3.5-hour cut when they got all of it together for an assembly, because, I don't know, it has the potential to go too long. I do feel like they cut it back well. I don't know if they could have if you could lose more. Maybe in the beginning you could lose a little bit of him training and getting to the actual diving school, but for the most part, I think it's down to its necessities.
And while the movie sort of does fly by, when you're watching for Charlize, you're like, oh my god. Because I wrote down, we're 50 minutes in and there's still no Charlize. She shows up like a couple minutes after that, but I was like, come on.
I know, that is the name of the game for the most part, because especially if it's a with credit, for the most part, I'm not expecting a huge role, but I'm not expecting her to, like, show up after an hour. Like, that felt too long.
And the thing to point out is that when this movie came out, so, I mean, they probably filmed it a couple years before or whatever, but De Niro was 57 and she was like 26.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a true story, so I'm assuming there was a discrepancy in age. And I also, I mean, he's probably playing a little younger and she's probably playing a little bit older, but there's still like a gap there.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, that asshole at the New Year's Eve party says, you know, you have such a lovely daughter or whatever. Like, they didn't just cast these people because they fit the role. Like, it's based on reality or whatever. But it's still, like, startling.
right.
how big of a difference there is.
Yeah, especially when they're like arm in arm together and she's nuzzled up against him. And I'm just like, really? Okay, I guess so. One thing I want to say about Charlize in this is that I actually feel like she's period appropriate in
yes.
this. Like she fits into the time zone here, which I was not anticipating. I didn't feel like in previous movies that she worked so well in the past, but
which I think
here.
And also she looks the part too, because she's
yeah.
in the outfits and the hair
yeah.
and the way that she smokes the cigarette. Like, it all works. She's one of three women in this movie. There's the older
yeah.
librarian who goes away,
right.
and then there's Cuba's wife, and then there's Charlize, right?
Yeah.
And basically everybody else is a dude.
Mm.
And the way that they're dressed, aside from when they're in the actual diving outfit, they're in just navy clothes. And so it's
yeah.
sort of, I'm sure they're updated now, but they could be, this could be a movie from like the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, all the way up to like the 90s probably.
Yeah.
And so when you see her come in this old-timey car, in this old-timey clothes, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually having trouble placing when most of this movie took place for a lot of the film, because the opening says
they 19... jump around a bunch.
Yeah, it goes from 66 to 44 and then to whenever we are. By the time she shows up and I'm like, okay, I know when we are. I get
and
it.
Then they also, you know, we see her there, and then like I think they use that New Year's Eve to be like, hey, now we're 5 years later.
Yeah.
They show in the back like 1956, like Happy New Year or whatever.
I appreciated that too, that they yeah, took a scene and made it happen on New Year's Eve to reorient us as to what time it is. Like that was pretty clever.
But in that first scene where she shows up to the bar and she's already a little bit two sheets to the wind or whatever the saying is, and they go in there, and I'm still trying to figure out if she and De Niro are married. I mean, we know that they have the last name, but we don't know. De Niro takes out that pipe and he's like, you know, you see this pipe, like,
oh,
this is General
story.
MacArthur pipe. And the way that she reacts to it, I'm like, oh no, they're married. Like
yeah,
she's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like, oh god, this fucking story.
It's
again.
The Ocean's
like, I can't...
It's the Ocean's 13 Clooney eye roll.
Yeah.
Move, she's like, it's just like the biggest
right,
in the world.
Here we go again. And she just deals with it.
Mm.
Because I mean, I guess that's the time, you know, she's not gonna like speak out. I mean, she does sort of speak out against her husband, like, you know, you abandoned me on our anniversary, but she's still just like, she's heard this story. He's probably tells this to everybody, like he's trying to impress or whatever.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, I get it. I got to keep my mouth shut. But, like, I was like, oh, no, they're definitely together. Like, that is the moment where I'm like, yes, they are married.
I really like where this scene went, where it turns into the bar bet of
yes.
about who can hold their breath longer.
Which is also, I mean, I guess it's a Navy bar, but they just have two fully operational
yeah.
diving suits or the tops
just
with the water.
Yeah, just the helmets that they could fill up with water. Like, you would think they could just hold their breath.
How often do you think that there's a breath-holding contest bar? Every night?
Probably every night, if not twice a night. What was especially funny to me is there's a moment where Charlize feels like she's witnessed a couple of these, and like she's like running out of the bar when Cuba's wife is like, or not at that, she's not
well,
the wife yet.
So here's why, because earlier in the movie, there's the male helicopter, and the male helicopter crashes into the ship that they're on,
uh-huh.
and the helicopter sinks. And so De Niro, who's the Master Chief diver, he goes down underwater, and then to bring the guy back, but then he has to go back and rescue the other guy or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so as they're going down, the thing rocks, and he like plummets into the water.
Yeah.
And because he goes down so fast, he gets embolisms in both lungs.
Right.
And they're like, hey, if you basically stress your lungs out at all ever again,
you're gonna die. Yeah.
And so I think it's a combination at the bar that she's seen this before, but she also knows he shouldn't be doing this.
Yes, that too.
And so
yeah.
when he's like, basically it's a dick measuring contest, like who's got the bigger dick, who can hold their breath for longer, him or Cuba, and she's like, are you really this arrogant, like this self-centered, this dumb,
yeah.
that to prove that you're like a bigger man than this guy, you might die? And like, the reason it ends, I mean, he starts to like, you know, sort of gasp for air, but like his nose starts
yeah,
bleeding.
Starts bleeding.
And like, he's another 30 seconds away from maybe dying. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
And
so I think
he's probably drunk.
And he's probably drunk. And I think, I mean, they're both like well over 4 minutes. Like, they're both killing it. But I think it's just like, I can't believe that this is my life, that this
yeah.
is the guy. And so that's when she leaves the bar and crashes her car into the telephone pole.
But when she's leaving the bar, she comes like face to face with Cuba's girlfriend, and she like can't bring herself to say like a word to her.
Right.
That bothered me. That
well,
moment.
I think it's like, I think in that wordless exchange, she sort of says, I've been dealing with this forever. I hope you don't have to, too.
I could see that.
And
okay.
I don't think that, because, I mean, she's also, she's drunk. She's upset.
Yeah, yeah,
she sees
yeah.
a, she's, it's, you know, a
but they
room
don't
full
know
of white
each
people,
other, but like,
but she's the only other black
that's
person.
True.
In
okay,
there.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
she
yeah.
knows, even if they're not dating, like, she knows she's with Cuba.
Right.
So whether she's a mom or a sister or a girlfriend or whatever, she knows that this is something that, like, this woman, however she's related to Cuba, has to deal with. And so she's, like, in that glance.
I wish I picked up on that more. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we had gotten her to show up, an introduction of her earlier sober, and then she comes careening around the corner hammered like that, maybe the impact would have hit me a little bit.
Because the way that I wrote it down, I said she's seen enough, she tries to sympathize with Cuba's girl Joe, but she has no words. Like, I thought she wanted to say something and just, like, was
yeah.
so overwhelmed by all of it that she's like, I
yeah.
can't.
No, I read that, but I just wish the movie sort of had a moment to take them both aside and say to each other, like, what are, you know, why are we doing this? What is going on here? Like, you know, what is it about this that brings us here and all that? Or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
at least have, like, Cuba's girl can try and talk to Charlize or something and say, like, what's going on? What's going on? And then, like, yeah, she runs out of the bar and...
And, quote, she tried to drive off the pier like a crazy woman.
Do you think, like, she was trying to kill herself?
Probably.
Yeah, like... Whoa, like, in and out of this movie in, like, one sequence would have been insane.
It would have been great. But, I mean, that also becomes a different movie where it becomes more about De Niro dealing with the loss of his wife and everything. And instead,
yeah, it's about
you know,
Cuba.
That's just a slap in the face that he needs where he's like, oh, I'm sorry, honey. Like, let's go, I guess, spend our anniversary drunk and, like, in the hospital or something. I don't know.
As much as I do like this movie, I feel like a few, like, some things come too easily. Nothing comes easy for Cuba's character whatsoever, like, at all. But I just feel like we're missing a few moments with De Niro and his wife, with Cuba and his girlfriend, maybe even between the Navy guys without those two, because they're in every scene, one or the other. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
like, it would have been kind of cool just to get a few moments of people talking about them or other stuff that's going on, you know, aside from them. I do like Michael Rapaport. Wish we had maybe even a little more of him and Cuba, like, interacting together.
I do wonder, though, like, because I agree with you all there, but I wonder if you get that stuff, if it doesn't work as well as a story about Cuba. Because, like,
yeah.
this is about him. Like, it's not
I
about
understand.
The
yeah.
Navy at that time. It's not about how to become a Master Chief diver. It's about the story of Carl Brashear.
Right.
And it's like... Yeah, I would have. I completely agree that I would have liked to have seen other stuff. I would have obviously liked to have seen more Charlize. And it also feels a little bit weird that at the end, when he's, you know, after he's lost his leg and after he is basically trying to recertify himself as
yeah.
a Master Chief diver, that she, like, it feels weird that she's in the courtroom cheering him on. I'm just like, oh, it's just, like, you know, a friendly face. Like, I get why she would be there, but the movie's like, hey, we got to bring her back a little bit.
Well, De Niro was supposed to be in there with him, and they wouldn't let him in.
But then
he threatens
his way in.
Yeah, so I think she was there for him more than
gotcha.
Anything.
You know, one thing that I was sort of sad by is that Hal Holbrook, who is, you know, this old guy who in this movie is maybe the most racist guy in the movie.
Yeah, he's
usually
terrible.
Plays such a sweet old man. And I was like, why are you such an asshole in this movie? Like, this guy that I can't think of off the top of my head any other movie that he's been in, but he's been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I recognize.
And he's always like this, like, I feel like he was the kind of guy who was born an old man. Like, I've only seen him as an old man in things. And then here, he's like the most vile racist of anybody in the military, or in the Navy. And I'm like, man, like, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I understand that you got, this is the story of, this is Cuba's character. This isn't the red, there's the peripheral stuff.
Yeah.
But that is, it's interesting, the dynamics of the inner workings of the Navy, where the blatant hazing and racism, just like the open racism. Like, the story about the Hal Holbrook character is he was supposed to, like, get his own ship and be, you know, set up for life and stuff, but instead, like, he had a medical exam and he's crazy. So they stuck him in Bayonne, New Jersey, like, at the top of some tower, and he's a nut. He's, like, a certified nut. So it's, like, really interesting. Maybe I want another movie about the Navy that is, you know what I'm saying? That explores all that other stuff that has
yeah.
a different story going on.
I'm sure that movie exists. I just don't know what that movie
it's
is.
It's not the USS Indianapolis, unfortunately.
Although, I did make a note that in 2009, the USNS TAKA-7, I don't know what that stands for, was named the USNS Carl Brashear.
Oh, cool.
In honor of Master Chief Boatswain's mate, in parentheses, Master Diver, Carl M. Brashear, who died in 2006, so this is posthumous. This guy was obviously, you know, based on true story, but obviously a landmark enough event that he, you know, an important enough person, basically, you know, Jackie Robinson of the Navy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so he got a boat named after him, I mean, after he died, but that's still pretty cool.
Like, there's a lot of cool moments with him. Like, I love at the end when he's doing his test and the, you know, how Holbrook's like, if he shows up, like, he's not going to pass and all this. So they sabotage his test at the bottom of the lake.
So, yeah, so that's not even at the end. That's, like, in the middle of the
movie.
Oh, you're
right, that's not...
because he's gotten such good grades.
He's, like, awesome.
Like, you basically pass the mental and the physical.
Yeah.
And he's done so well studying with his girlfriend at the library, because he starts out struggling and he finally gets better, that De Niro tells Hal Holbrook, like, he just has to pass this thing. If he passes it, he's a master. He's a diver. He qualifies. They're like, well, we better make sure he doesn't pass. And so that's why when they all go down, they, like, slice open his tool bag.
Yeah.
And everything falls to the bottom of the water. And I'm like, what kind of men of honor would do this?
Well, yeah. Like, that's the whole... That's why eventually De Niro relents against what his superiors say, is because of honor.
Yeah.
You know, it all comes down to that at the end. And I think they forget that somewhere along the way. And if it was written on the wall somewhere and they saw it every day, they wouldn't act like such pricks all the time.
But this physical part, like the physical challenge, if you will, from, you know, Double Dare, family, you know, whatever, it takes these other guys like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and Kuba's there for nine and a half hours. And Hal Holbrook, from the top of his tower, shouts, don't bring him up until he stops moving. Not until he stops moving. You're like, holy, like, he wants to drown this guy.
Yeah. He's certifiable, too, that guy. So I think that really is when it comes out, is that that guy shouldn't be in charge. We shouldn't be listening to him.
Yeah.
He basically said, drown the guy, you know, let's kill him. You know, we could cover it up.
Yep.
You know, he died during a training accident.
And that's when De Niro finally is like, no, 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 mm-hmm. this is wrong. And I think there's enough guys loyal, and like, even though they don't like Cuba, they're all racist themselves, they're loyal enough to De Niro. He's like, help him up. And then so these guys start to do it. Movie magic at that time. I'm sure it all happened something like this, but as they go to pull him up, they feel the tug on the thing.
Yeah.
Perfect assembly of the pipe or whatever they were building underwater. And so they bring him up after 9.5 hours. He passes the test. They also could have pulled him up early, right? And been like, no, sorry, you didn't do it. You failed. But in that 9.5 hours, he finally got the thing. He got all the parts. He assembled the perfect assembly, comes up, passes the test, and becomes this master diver.
I think that one guy, I feel the one guy's changed. The one guy who got the medal instead of him, who was like the coward. Like, I actually feel like when he walks over to help out, that I feel the change in him finally. You know, like, it's been teetering. Like, they show shots of him sitting at the bar looking at it. Like, he's always trying to fight his instincts towards Cuba, like, from that point on.
And
I
don't
feel.
Think it's like, it's not something that happens. I think it's just like a respect for
the
fact that this guy is better than all of them at what he does, because that's the other thing. Like,
you just can't deny it.
You know, like, I've read a lot and, you know, seen movies about Jackie Robinson and everything like that, and like, they basically said, like, you have to be better than everyone. Not necessarily like you have to be like a great ball player, but like, you have to act better, you have to behave better, you have to like do everything better, because if you slip up at all, there's reason for you to, like, get out of here. Like, oh, like, we gave you your shot, now get out of here. So he's far and away better than everybody else here. He's an upstanding citizen. He deals with racism. Everything across the board, he's, like, the immaculate, exact role model of what you want to be. You know, I don't think people still might not want to socialize with him, but they know that this is a guy who deserves their respect, who's good, who's going to maybe one day save their lives. You know, aside from Hal Holbrook, I think they all sort of kind of come around on it a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, and especially De Niro, you know, I was wondering, do you think he's the guy who sent the Airplane magazine about the guy with the prosthetic leg? Because you never find out who sent that. And I wondered, because he's like watching him on TV, and then in the next shot, Cuba gets that thing in the mail, and then he's like, he's like, cut off my leg, I could get a prosthetic, and I could do the test again. And then at that point, at the end, it feels like De Niro's doing this as some sort of, like, he's trying to make things right. You know, I genuinely believe that his character has come around and has seen, like, the errors of his ways, and especially, I wonder, we never get into why he went AWOL. I wonder why he ran away and all that kind of stuff, but again, not his movie.
I don't remember, I mean, like, I've already sort of forgotten parts of this movie, and I just saw it, like, a couple days ago, but, like, I feel like part of it is anger at the way that the rest of the Navy is treating this guy. Like, I don't know, like, there's a lot of things
rock
that could
bottom
be happening.
Kind of stuff. Yeah.
We don't know if he sent the magazine, but we also don't know for sure if he fixed the radio. Like, he smashes this radio that Cuba's dad gave him. A son never forgets, ASNF on the side. It's the only thing he has that really reminds him of his dad, and he smashes this thing in a fit of, like, racist anger. As De Niro's getting kicked out, like, Cuba finds the radio has been repaired, that it works exactly as it should. Like, these little off-screen moments that we know that De Niro is still probably an asshole, but he doesn't blindly hate Cuba.
Right, right. Yeah, he's still a asshole for sure because of the way he like bullies everybody around and everything, but they have mutual respect and he's going to help them instead of do nothing because it's the right thing to do. And I mean, maybe he feels like he could be on the right side of history at that point, yeah. And then he is just a jerk, but I really buy those moments in the courtroom at the end there where he puts it on and Kuba's like, you know, I'll do this in front of everybody, this and then, like, the Navy forgot, like, the one thing that matters most, which is honor, and the whole courtroom's like, oh, he's right, we forgot about honor. And then De Niro calling him Cookie again, you know, and, like, really getting into his head and, like, knowing how to push his buttons. I'm like, oh, they're doing, like, all these, like, callbacks to when they were enemies, and now it's because they're, like, friends and working together and they have a common thing going on, and I don't know, I really liked it towards the end there, how it all came together, and especially how, like, De Niro just leaves the courtroom and Cuban knows he's never going to see him again ever in his entire life, and that is the end of that chapter.
And also what's nice is that when Cuba gets his prosthetic leg,
yeah,
De Niro shows up sober, and we're going to go back and talk about Charlize's scenes, but, like, sober De Niro shows up to an afroed Cuba in rehab.
With a mustache,
and, like,
right?
And helps him come back. Like, he's not only there in court form, but, like, he's there working him back.
Like Mickey.
Like,
yeah. They do that, like, Rocky stuff. There's even a scene where he's trying to do the jump rope. It's like, oh, Rocky. There's one cool shot, too, where we get, like, the Lieutenant Dan shot of Cuba missing a leg. Like, that was really interesting.
Oh, in the mirror.
Yeah, because he, like, swings around and he's missing a leg, but then he puts it into his prosthetic leg.
Yeah.
So I was like, how did they do that shot? Was he just wearing, like, a green sock and he just put it into, like,
maybe
the leg boot or something? But I like that. It was interesting. I felt that.
But the movie ends with Cuba getting basically recertified, that proving to this young upstart cocky guy who literally wrote the book, the new book.
Such an
that,
asshole.
That, you know, he's able to... I mean, by all intents and purposes, he probably shouldn't be. I mean, he can qualify, but, like, they said, like, he's 20 years older, he's missing a leg, he probably shouldn't be doing this. It's just because he can.
Yeah, but it's not only because he can, he ended up doing it for another, like, 15 years or something like that, too. So it's not like it was a one-shot deal, like he just, you know, a ceremonious title or anything. Like, he was out there, like, in the water salvaging stuff with that leg and everything, so.
So going back a little bit to Charlize, so we have the first scene where we talked about where she's at the bar. The second time we see her is at that 1956 New Year's Eve party. And I was like, oh, look, she's so classy. Like, they're sober. And then I look closer. Nope. And, like, there's lipstick smeared all over both of their faces. They're just, like, drunkenly making out all night. She goes up to the table, and the guy's like, I didn't know you had a daughter. All she wants to do, she's like, come on, let's go dance. Let's go dance. Like, I've seen this. I know how this plays out. Like, let's get out of here. And then De Niro, he's like, yeah, all right, let's go. And then he turns around and, like, clocks the guy. And she just starts crying. And again, like, this is, again, another movie, maybe 100% success rate, where Charlize is just, like, overcome by emotion, just, like, tears up, and it's just like, I can't go through this again.
Yeah, she's a really good actress. Like, I feel like she's doing all this stuff really well. Like you said, like, someone who is just beaten down by this abuse, you know? And it's not even that he's abusive toward her directly all the time. It's the way he acts towards other people, and she's around and is associated with him, and his embarrassment, and he never has any consideration for anybody, not even himself, which is
right.
Kind of shocking. Like, he doesn't even care what happens to himself, let alone, like, his gorgeous, caring wife. And all she wants to do is protect them, too. Like, she knows all the signs. She's like, let's just laugh it off. Let's just go over here. And, like, let's make our way to the door.
Yep.
And look, maybe we can make our way home. And it's just that he's too strong and he's just too angry. And he will just not let anybody get to him like that. So he will risk getting demoted by punching a superior officer.
Yep. Again, demoted again.
Again.
And again. And then we have, when he goes to rehab, there's one scene, I'm not sure if it's her.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We have him shouting in his bed.
Yeah.
There's, like, a woman with black hair, dark hair, and she, like, sort of walks through the room. I'm like, is that her? I'm like, I couldn't tell if that was her or not.
Yeah, so there's one scene where it looks like she's sitting in the kitchen, like, maybe talking to her mother or something, and you see in the foreground a jail door or something. It seems like a steel door.
I don't think that's in their house, though.
Okay.
I think that's in, like,
that's
I think it's like
a rehab facility center, I think.
Okay,
yeah, because he's detoxing.
Yes.
Hard, like,
yes.
Screaming his head off. Yeah. There's the other moment in the garden where he's, like,
that's the other
in
big scene.
Pajamas,
yeah.
Right.
That's where she comes out and she says to him, like, you know, if you want to get clean, if you can reform yourself, I'm here for you, but if you don't, if you can't, whatever, keep on walking. And that's,
right,
like, the other really emotional scene where she says, I'm here for you, but you need to put in the work.
Yeah, and that worked for me, too, because her character was stone sober, too. She's like, let's do this clean. We could do this together. And it's a very short moment, too, and I feel like she conveys emotionally what needs to get by quite well in that scene quickly, and not in like a false way at all. Like, I really buy her in this role. She, you know, even though she's very hysterical and dramatic and everything, like, it works. It's working.
I don't want to say, like, I feel like, you know, on a lot of the recent Cage Club episodes and on a lot of the Hoffman episodes, that it's the same thing, and I feel like we're saying it again here, but, like, she, I do feel like she is, I mean, I don't know if she's necessarily the best part of this movie, but she's great in this small role.
Yeah, I mean, I love De Niro in this. I've never seen this movie before, and I was I can't believe this is, like, I feel like this is one of the really good De Niro performances I've not seen yet. He's just so intense in this movie. Like, he's really bringing it. I really like Cuba Gooding Jr. in this, too. Like,
he'll always be your Uncle Juice.
I mean, I didn't see him in OJ. I know him mostly from, you know, Jerry Maguire, Snow Dogs. I mean, I know him from his comedy stuff and everything. And, there's moments in this movie where the look on his face is, like, shocking. Like, how intense. And I'm getting everything that he's putting down in this. The emotion, everything.
We're watching this as we record this, and it's almost sad that he's got such, like, a gentle, kind face, because if he looked tougher, I think he would have a lot of the parts that Denzel has. But, like,
dude,
he just, he looks too friendly.
That's
and, like,
part of
he
it.
Can look intense, but, like, when, like, his resting face is just like, oh, look at that nice guy. Like, he can play cruel and mean and intense and serious, but, like, you just look at him, you're like, oh, look at that guy.
Yeah, I think he had a role in Machete 2, where he played like a maniac for a scene or two or so, because it was like the character was like a master of disguise, and in one scene he was Lady Gaga, and another scene he was Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh, the chameleon.
The chameleon guy, yeah. And in that he's like insanely unhinged and stuff, so like I know he has range. I just had never seen him do a performance quite as tempered as this, and the frustration, the anger, everything, it almost reminded me a little bit of Algy from The Nick at times.
Oh,
the way
okay.
he was sort of holding it back because he had to and everything and stuff. So like I think Charlize is great in this. I just think like there's two other really great performances that are on screen for the whole movie.
The year after this movie came out, Cuba would go on to play Doris Miller, the first African American to be awarded the Navy Cross in Pearl Harbor. So a movie that we almost covered for the podcast. So yeah, he went from this movie to that movie, both about the Navy, sort of similar decorated African Americans in history. So
that would have been amazing if he played the same character in another movie.
That movie that apparently Duke says is terrible. So I'm glad I didn't see that. But I would like to see him in that. So
I didn't even know he was in that. So
neither did I. And the only other thing, the only other note that I have about this movie is that at the very end, in that courtroom scene, we mentioned it earlier, that Charlize is there to root him on, and I thought it was really cute, like a really nice sort of show of support that she, like, winks to him. She's like, I'm here for you, like, I got you. It reminded me a little bit of, I mean, again, it's a courtroom, you know, we've had a couple law battles already. We've had Devil's Advocate, we had Trial and Error, we're back here now. But that also reminded me of Children of the Corn, where they're in the congregation, they're just like cutting through the crowd, and like, oh, here's a pretty blonde lady or whatever, or a pretty, you know, I don't know, she's not blonde in this movie, but like, oh, here's a pretty lady, let's cut to her, and she can just smile, and just like, you know, go on from there.
We just need reaction shots from the crowd, basically. But you're right, she's not blonde in this one. She's got the short auburn hair.
One thing that I realized, and I don't know if these episodes have come out yet, so I don't know if you've heard them, but as I'm going through and editing these episodes, we've said twice, we're like, I don't know if Cage ever had different hair, and I don't know if Charlize has done accents, and I'm like editing, I'm like, we're so dumb. Like, Cage had all sorts of crazy hair, and the Charlize has had like that southern accent and everything.
She uses it a little in this, I think.
There's a couple times in the different episodes, whatever they were, where I just like come in and I'm just like, hey guys, we're dumb. This is actually what I was what I was trying to say was. But yeah, like, I mean, like, we follow, again, different hair, sort of a different accent, you know, not as dramatic as her accent was in The Yards in last week's episode.
Which but, I don't think I picked up on, but it was there.
You can hear it. But it's a role similar to what she's played, but it's different enough and also convincing enough that you're like, oh, right, this is believable, this is viable, I dig this.
At times I was getting a little bit of the Devil's Advocate performance after they moved to New York, but before she is attacked by the devil, where she's like in that
carefree lifestyle
kind of, but also like she's not supremely confident in the stability of her relationship.
Oh, okay.
Kind of
that's fair.
Going on.
Yep,
that came across this time for me too. I mean, yeah, I think she's great in it. Like, look, she doesn't have a lot of time to make her point, and she makes it explicit, you know. And I think, and again, I like, as much as I like this movie, I feel like it's the tonally, it's kind of strange. Like, it feels like little kids should be allowed to watch this movie, but then the N-word is all over this, and the F-word is all over this movie and everything, and there's that gore at the end where Cuba loses his leg and everything,
This is no Boy in Blue.
No, but, you know, if there were, like, a TV edit that would run on, like, Channel 4, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like this could be cut down to, like, a PG-13 thing, and I guess what I'm saying is I'm a little surprised that this isn't more well-known, or I didn't know about this more before watching it. The performances, the way it looks, the subject matter, it worked for me.
You know, I wonder, I actually didn't look up till now, budget of $32 million, made 48 domestic and another 33 worldwide, so it made 50 million. So, I mean, it wasn't a huge hit. I think it could have, like, I think definitely if you knock it down, it's definitely over 100 million.
You know what's kind of weird about it is, like, you don't get too many films about the military that is sort of like bad-mouthing it in a way. Like, this is about the Navy, but, like, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this is also sort of bad-mouthing America. Like, look how terrible we all are.
Oh, yeah. True, I guess. But maybe that's why it didn't get a lot of press or something, is because it's not, like, one of these super gung-ho patriotic.
Right, it's not propaganda.
Yeah. It's, like, it's real. It's, like, a real movie.
This movie came out on November 10th, 2000, so right around Veterans Day, so that makes sense to me, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, do you have any other notes about this before we move on to the game and to the other stuff?
No, I don't think so. I like submarine sequence at the end where they're salvaging, they're looking for the nuclear warhead
that
got lost, and then a sub comes and catches Kuba's, like, breathing apparatus thing.
Is that's from the beginning of the movie, right? That's what they're watching on TV, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's after we've wrapped back around and stuff. Like, I like all, like, the action. Like, I was kind of surprised that the action set pieces were actually exciting and filled with action. When they're underwater, it's like watching The Abyss. It's like, whoa, like, this is exciting.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, there's no place for her in this movie, but I wish that Charlize was in this more, because if it was, we could, like, point and be like, this is a good movie where she's in it a bunch and everything, but, like, it's one or the other. Like, either see her in a tiny role that's really good, or actually watch, like, a movie. Like, it's not a movie you can recommend for her.
No.
But it's a movie I think you can recommend.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it for De Niro. He's insane in this, and Kuba's really good.
So we have an email address, watch@cageclub.me. No email today, I don't think, but you can email us. I'm going to keep saying it, even if you don't email us, just, we know, we're here if you want to let us know that you're listening, whatever. We are going to move on to the game, the pitch a sequel game.
Oh,
so we
have
Men of Honor 2, Even More Honor. So we're going to go to randomize number 1 through 9. So, Mike, you are going to go first.
Oh,
you are
man.
Going to pitch a sequel, a straight-to-DVD sequel, Men of Honor 2.
Oh, boy.
We have 9 different genres that we randomly get assigned one of. And so if you were pitching a sequel, because we got so burnt out by Hollywood Tycoon,
I think
that
I
we might return to it. So if you were to make a sequel of this movie that's a straight to DVD, so maybe you can get one actor back. Maybe it's just a Powers Booth. Who knows? What would you make? What would be your sequel to Men of Honor?
I just want to say that the last 2 times I played this game, I feel like I've lost terribly. Like, I'm not good at this.
Well,
yet.
Now it's just one on one.
Now it's a one on one match.
So this might be your chance to shine.
So. It's all coming down. It's going to boil down to the premise. I can't bring anybody back, really. I got to find out the actual date and if this has actually happened yet. But my Men of Honor 2 is actually going to be Woman of Honor.
Ooh.
And it's about the first female diver Master Chief.
Okay.
And even if that's not, like, a real thing, that's what the movie's going to be about. Pretty much the same. It's kind of like a retelling, but, you know, in a different era and with a female. And so, you know, she's from Middle America, and she goes to join the Navy, and she gets a lot of shit from the guys and the girls, probably, you know, maybe because she's, like, a brainiac, or, like, there's something, like, special about her, like there was about Cuba. Like, it's not just because he was black, but he was, like, a great swimmer, and he was, like, all these other things, too. So, like, she really proves herself on the boat. She goes to diving school. Like, she's got a really tough CO, maybe played by, like, Demi Moore or something instead of De Niro, you know? Like, you gender swap, like, a lot of it. If you can, I don't know the history of this. Again, did we just look up the history of this?
So, Donna Tobias in 1974 became the first female Navy diver. I don't know she was a Master Chief or not, but that's Donna Tobias that we're looking at right now.
Okay, so mine is going to be the Donna Tobias story.
Cool, I like it. Too bad it's just straight to DVD. Nobody really wants it, but...
No.
But I like it. I like it. That's a good idea. That's a nice way to go here. Ooh, I have 7 sci-fi... Okay, Men of Honor 2 sci-fi. Okay, so here, easy, not necessarily creative, but as I was watching... So what I also want to say was that, you know, Master Chief...
Halo.
Yep. BioShock, right? So here's what happens. So... Men of Honor 2, we get Kuba back because this is Kuba. I honestly have no idea what Kuba's doing. You know, between 2000 and 2015, I don't know what he was doing in real life. I know Jerry Maguire is 95-ish. I know this is 2000. Who knows what Cuba Gooding's doing?
So, Boat Trip with Horatio Sands.
Okay. What else is he known for? What else is on that five on the right? So he's known... Oh, this is number three for him.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire, Boys in the Hood, Men of Honor, American Crime Story, and Snow Dogs.
Okay. So Men of Honor 2. So this is what happens. We flash forward. This is after this movie ends. We're not going back in time. He's only got the one leg. He's got the prosthetic. You know, they have slightly more advanced Master Chief diver suits. We see in this movie that they're not very good at putting people overboard because, like, they hit stuff all the time. People fall off, whatever. As he's going out to a regular routine operation, you know, there's somebody in the water. It hits the side of the boat. He falls into the water. Cable snaps. He plunges down.
Into the deep.
Somehow.
37 meters.
Enters a... Better that movie. somehow enters this, like, state of weightlessness and sort of finds this, like, oxygen. Falls upon a 1950s area called Rapture, which is from Bioshock.
Like it.
But he, this is where the twist is. It's not just Bioshock, where it's like this guy, no gods or kings, only man. This is Kuba in this suit going down there, and he is a big daddy. He is looked at as this menacing figure because he's in this, like, futuristic, crazy-looking suit. There is just this world where he comes in and, like, he's trying to live in this world and sort of get back to Earth get back to the surface because Joe is up there and Joe is worried for him. But, you know, he's down there and he, like, lives in this world. It's like this undersea sort of Atlantis rapture area. So that's Men of Honor 2, Deep Blue Sea.
Nice.
Men of Honor 2, Down Deep.
Nice.
So
I still like it.
The last segment on the show, we have the golden wallpapers or the golden teeth, the awards nomination. This is so that we don't miss anybody at the end. We want to go through and make sure we honor things. So I'm going to say here, right off the bat, we're going to nominate Kuba and Robert De Niro for best male actor / role.
I mean, yeah, I wonder if we have like a best duo thing, but because then we could be like Charlize and Keanu, best duo, or I don't know. She'll still try to work it out.
We're still working it out. So, yeah, so we've got Cuba Gooding Jr. as Carl Brashear in Men of Honor. And then we also got Robert De Niro in Men of Honor. Anything else about this movie that you think was good or bad enough that we should honor it in the Golden Wallpapers? Got a lot of different categories. I don't remember the score or the soundtrack at all.
No.
Cinematography is fine, but I don't think it's anything special.
I like the way it looks a lot. I mean, you know, it's shot like almost like Forrest Gump or a Spielberg movie or something like that. Like, it looks it's very clean. I wish we could give like a special shout out to New Jersey or something like that for this movie. Watching them, I'm trying to sort of focus more on what to nominate Charlize for. And this time, nothing is really standing out.
She's not in it enough to really recognize her in here. Not enough for a love story, not enough for best or worst role. I don't think this movie is good, but I don't think it's enough to put it in that best movie category.
No,
there's
still
no sex scene. She doesn't die in this movie.
Oh,
she doesn't get naked.
She doesn't die and she doesn't get naked. I almost feel like those are very positive attributes to this film for her character.
I also do wonder, you know, we talk a lot about how she gets naked a lot and how it's usually not
gratuitous,
necessarily warranted and everything. Like, I mean, obviously, by this point in her career, I think she's able to sort of choose. It's not like she's an extra on the set of Children of the Corn 3, like, yeah, like, hike up that skirt or whatever.
Well, it's also like Atomic Blonde. It's not like,
well, that's
that,
yeah, that's,
you know,
for sure. But I wonder now if we got to the point where, and Charlize Theron, right?
Right.
Where she's a big enough actress, will she not have to do that anymore? Like, I know she's going to get naked and stuff, still going to come.
But her choice kind of thing.
But it's going to be pick and choose as opposed to like, oh, you're a pretty girl, we need to see those boobs.
I hope so, man, because that is just like that just sucks to think about that, you know, not just her, but that a whole caliber of actor have to do that to succeed at some point.
And I think, you know, last week when we were talking with Zach about The Yards, the near masterpiece film The Yards,
still to be determined,
he was saying, you know, he didn't feel like her nudity was unearned, like he was more okay with it. I think we just become sort of protective of her in a way.
Because in The Yards, it was like, to me, it felt like the scene was over and the director was like, keep rolling. Now take your shirt off.
Yeah. And I think it's just like, because we know that she's a great actress, she doesn't need to do that, but, you know, if she's okay with, like, I'm sure that she had enough clout, maybe not, maybe I'm not sure, but, like, I feel like she would have had enough clout that, like, she could have, you know, maybe been wearing a bra or something. Like, there could have been, like, a gray area, but I feel like she's maybe okay with it. It's a shame that it has to happen at all, but I think that doing a podcast like this really accentuates that instead of just being like, yeah, boobs, it's right. I wish that it didn't have to happen. And also, we're protective of her because we've seen her and we've sort of journeyed through her career to this point, and it sort of feels like, oh, I feel like you don't have to do this. And at the same time, in a different sense, you know, it's like Damon Lindelof talking about, like, how there should be more male nudity. And, like, there's, we've seen 13 movies. She's probably gotten naked in, like, 10 of them, you know, taking clothes off in, like, 10 of them. Mm-hmm. And we've seen Ben Affleck butt, and maybe that's it. Like, we don't see a lot of male nudity. It's just, it's her a lot. And so I wish that it had merit or reason. Yes. Like, Atomic Blonde, there's reason for it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, like, Devil's Advocate, it makes sense. Yep. You know, like, if it's warranted, okay. But, like, I feel like I'm past the point as a viewer where I'm just like, oh, nudity, all right. Like, no, like,
spoiler, if you want to find boobs, they're really easy to find online.
Exactly.
You can,
like, that's the thing.
You can go anywhere and find boobs.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm not watching feature films hoping that the actors are going to get naked. You know what I'm saying?
If it's you're not Mr. Skin.
I'm not Mr. Skin. I'm not that one from Knocked Up either. What do they call themselves? The basic point is, you know, if it's warranted for the story and the character, I'm okay with it. But if it's gratuitous, it's going to bother me and I'm going to call it out. And I feel like lately that's what's been happening.
Yep. But maybe we've turned a corner. Maybe next movie up is Legend of Bagger Vance. Pretty sure she's not naked.
I can't imagine.
You know, that is sort of
although I remember Boy in Blue, like, Cage got down to, like, his underwear in that time period. So, like,
but I also feel like, I think Bagger Vance is PG-13 maybe. I also feel like it's a companion piece to The Greatest Game Ever Played. It's another golf piece. So it's the movie that I've been thinking that we were watching for all his movies. Shout out Shia.
Wait, is this with Will Smith?
Yeah.
And is Will Smith a ghost? We'll have to find out. That's what I heard about. I think that's what I that's what I think the movie's about.
I don't remember.
He's a golf ghost.
Is this a Joe 2 guessing of, you know, the moments of what's going to happen in the next?
Is this Chubbs from Happy Gilmore's origin story?
No idea.
Okay.
I've seen the movie at least once, if not twice, and I don't remember anything about it. But I know Will Smith is in it, and I know there's a white golfer, and I don't remember who that is.
It'd be amazing if Shia LaBeouf wanders through.
We're watching right now, and she's like, just right now where she's like rolling her, like, I wish that I wanted that picture to be the picture for the episode. I got one of her smoking, but, like, it's that reaction gif, which is like basically from Mr. Show, the Karen Kilgariff, oh, you men. Just like, I can't, like, just, oh, you men. Man.
There's a certain intensity to all three of their performance when they're on screen together, like in this bar scene and later on in the courtroom where it gets really intense and stuff. Like, I don't know. I feel like the three of them would do well in another movie together, like something modern maybe. The Italian Job was about if they, you know, instead of Ed Norton, you had Cuba, and then someone else, you had De Niro.
Sure. Why not? Just recast them in everything. De Niro will be back in the movie 15 Minutes.
Oh,
which
okay.
We're going to get to in a couple weeks. I think maybe 2 weeks from now. I think it's Bagger Vance in 15 Minutes, and De Niro's back. I don't know what that movie's about, but
I've seen that one.
In the IMDb trivia, it said Charlize and De Niro appear together in 15 Minutes.
Okay, so. I've seen it. I remember De Niro's storyline. I don't remember any of Charlize being in it.
So she's in it, so that's going to be, I think, in 2 weeks. If not, you know, shortly thereafter.
Michael Rapaport ever come back, or
I hope so. You know, all I think of him as just from True Romance, whatever his character name is.
Oh, right, yeah.
Just the world's worst actor. Roommate in the fucking Floyd.
Oh, yeah. Dick Ritchie. That's it.
I'm not saying Michael Rapaport's a bad actor.
No, I know what
you're saying.
He's
like, Dick Ritchie's like, yeah, give me your money or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Like, and then the woman just like reading back to him, go see True Romance. I mean, watch this movie. So yeah, we posited 3 weeks ago. Mike had the idea to, quote unquote, 3 weeks ago, aka an hour ago. Mike said, you know, maybe at the end of these episodes we'll, you know, recommend movies to watch instead of this one. You should watch this movie, but also watch True Romance to see Dick Ritchie. This a great Michael Rapaport double feature.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, he's not in this enough. Kuba brings him back into the movie by doing the bar thing, the challenge at the bar. And
Michael Rapaport also directed a 30 for 30 about the Knicks. Like, he's a huge sports fan. He's a huge Knicks fan, huge New York fan.
Yeah, he directed a really good documentary about Tribe Called Quest. So go check that out. It's my recommendation.
So yeah, so just go IMDb Michael Rapaport and just, you know, pick something that he's directed or acted in and just go check that out. The takeaway from this movie is that Michael Rapaport is great. Any other last thoughts about Men of Honor before we close it up?
Nope, I'm good.
Cool, well, go see this movie, and for all the other episodes that we've done, because, I mean, oh, actually, where on this list, I think I saw where on this list, but where on your list roughly is this and your favorite Charlie's movie?
Oh, here, let's just go to the list real quick, why not?
I have this at number 6 right now, right behind Mighty Joe Young. I think it's actually, you know, I'm going to bump this, well, no, I'm going to leave this at, right behind Mighty Joe Young. I have Devil's Advocate, That Thing You Do, The Yards, Children of the Corn, Mighty Joe Young, Men of Honor.
Mine's 5th. Right above The Yards.
So we're the same top six, just in a different, slightly different order.
Yeah. I can't get over Mighty Joe Young. You know me, I'm just like a big fan of giant monster movies.
You know, actually, like... weirdly, so I had two different people. So we had a fan of, our friend of the program, super fan of the Joe 2 podcast, Jess Collins, commented or tweeted back when we tweeted out. She's like, I love this movie. And then friend of the show, Melissa Lynam, was like, oh, I love Mighty Joe Young. So like, that's this movie that like, I don't think people really thought of when they think of Charlize, maybe. They just think of the monkey. Like, yeah, think of the monkey. But it's this movie that like a lot of people loved growing up, so I don't fault you for having it number three. I just don't necessarily love it.
And Children of the Corn is just like one of the best schlock movies like I've seen ever. Like,
doing the dirty corn.
So good.
So yeah, so go check out cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter for all of our episodes of Watch the Throne, all of our other shows. What could we recommend? I guess go back to Cage Club, go listen to the Boy in Blue episode.
Yeah.
Because that's about sculling. It's about water. Yeah. It's not about diving.
You're rowing in a boat in water. I mean,
it's
baseball.
It's a water period piece.
Baseball came and destroyed that sport is the moral of that movie.
R.I.P. sculling. But yeah, go check out Cage Club. Go check out all the other shows at cageclub.me. Check out everything we've done. You know, this is coming out in February. We have a couple new shows this month, maybe, hopefully, at least one. You know, another one next month. So lots of fun, free things for you to do at those places. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
We'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.